to the splendor, the spectacle, the sparkling sensation, where the romance, the comedy, and the thrill of Disney fantasies come to electric life.
And as our friend Jiminy said, welcome. Welcome to the Disney Nerds Podcast, a place each week where like-minded people get together to discuss all things Disney. We'll help you get your Disney fix on. Here we go.
A Magic Kingdom proudly presents, in a million points of musical light, the magical worlds of Disney.
Hello and welcome to show number 116 of the Disney Nerds Podcast. Hey guys, how's it going? This is Ed, and welcome to the show. On this week's show, we've got a really special guest. If you've been part of the Disney community for any amount of years or listen to podcasts, you're going to recognize the name Mike Scopa. Mike was nice enough to stop by, have a little conversation with us about the upcoming Walt Disney World Marathon weekend and a bunch of other things. Now, I didn't have the chance to talk to Mike, so in a minute, I'm going to pass it off to Jimmy and to Jennifer. And they sat with Mike for about an hour, and I think you're really going to enjoy the information that you're going to hear. There's a lot of good stuff that I've never known before about the marathon weekend. I'm not a runner. Sam's not a runner. Jimmy's not a runner. Jen's our only quote-unquote runner on the show, and she's been to a couple races. And you know what? The more I listen to the show after editing and putting it together, I think I'm probably going to look into this maybe too. Jimmy mentioned how he's going to start. I think I'm going to have to start too. We'll talk about this down the road. Before I go too long, I just wanted to say again thank you to all the really cool emails we got from you guys. It was really nice to hear from you over the holidays, and I'm glad you enjoyed some of the holiday shows we brought you. I mean, last week's show was a really cool one to listen to. It really brought me back to when I was down at Disney World at the time the holidays were, and it's a little extra special feeling to kind of hear that once in a while. If you want to get in touch with the show, send us an email at thedisneynerds@yahoo.com. Or you could stop by our Facebook pages. We have a group page for the Disney Nerds. We also have the Disney Nerds podcast page. So without further ado, here's Jennifer, Jimmy, and Mike Scopa. Take it away, Jimmy.
Oh, thanks, Ed. Me and Jennifer are here with the legendary Mike Scopa. I can honestly say, from a podcasting perspective, Mike and the WDW Today Show, they were the first podcast that I ever listened to, and wouldn't be doing this today if it had not been for those guys. So, Mike, welcome.
Wow, Jimmy, that's quite an introduction. Thank you for your kind words. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, we really appreciate it. And also today, since this show, Mike is his current project right now is the Mickey Mouse podcast, which is all about running and marathons. We couldn't do this show without the one runner on our show, and that's Jennifer. So, Jennifer, thanks for being here.
Still so funny to be the runner when I'm so not a runner. But, yeah, Mike, it is so great to have you here. I was telling Jimmy, and I mentioned a little to you off air, that I have to be honest, I listened to WDW today, and then it took me a while, and I finally put together, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is Mike Scopa of The View from Scopa Towers. My friend and I have a friend who is equally Disney obsessed in the best way, and we used to just pour over your articles for All Ears and for Mouse Planet. And I remember the only one I really distinctly remember you talking about waking up Tinkerbell in, was that Sir Mickey's? That wouldn't be right. Where was she? Right across from Sir Mickey's, but whatever it was called at the time, it's where Castle Couture is or something, but it was years and years ago. So you would write about this and my friend would text me, did you read this? And so, I've been a big Mike Scopa fan because back in the day, man, there was nobody that would talk about Disney the way we wanted to talk about it. So thank you for those details. So where else did you start? I mean, I feel like I kind of have an idea, but you've been all over the internet.
Oh, wow. Wow. I think that the best way to start is back when I used to go to Disney World with my family. I would always make sure that I took very, very detailed notes on what I did, because I knew that when I returned, there would be all kinds of questions that would be asked by my friends, by my colleagues at work. And I was I hosted a Disney notes file or forum in my company's website, and So when I come back, I would write this big long trip report, and everyone would really, you know, find out, you know, what worked, what didn't work. I'd give them tips and tricks and everything, and then the internet started to grow, and on AOL there was a Disney chat that was on the second Tuesday of every month. So I decided, I think I'm going to try it. So I went on, and I remember the host. Her name was Laura 237. I don't know if I've ever met Laura 237, but I was on there with the chat, and there were people, weren't that many people at first. And then as the chats went along, people were asking questions, and I happened to have my trip reports, which were very detailed. I'm a technical writer by profession. And so one of the people on the chat, his name was DVC Clubber, contacted me and said, "Mike, you know, how do you remember all these details?" And I said, "It's very simple. I just refer to my trip report, which is maybe 20, 30, 40 pages long." And he said, "You know, I'm thinking about putting together a website based on trip reports. Would you please send me yours?" And I had several that I had sent him and everything. Well, website became DVC Clubber's Trip Reports or something like that, and it was Brian Bennett. Well, what happened was that particular site was the basis for another website called Mouse Planet. And Mouse Planet and Brian and I, we talked to the people out there, and we decided let's put something together. And Brian Bennett and myself became the what they call the chief information providers for Walt Disney World. So we actually signed a contract. I actually still own part of Mouse Planet. And they said, you know, what could you do? I said, I can give you two blogs a month. So that's what I started to do. I gave them two blogs a month, and people really enjoyed the stuff that I wrote. I kind of really looked forward to, you know, helping people out and giving them information. At the same time, wanted to be a little creative, and it really grew. And a couple of years ago, I don't know if you guys remember, you probably should because you're Disney nerds, but do you remember when there was a contest for the happiest pass holder on Earth contest? Do you remember that? This was a long time ago.
I would have been a pass holder. Was it for pass holders or to become one?
It was for annual pass holders, and it was a contest where you had to write in a paragraph why you feel you're the happiest pass holder on Earth.
Oh, cool.
And you know, I had no intentions of entering it. And then one morning, I remember getting an email from one of my Mouse Planet colleagues and said, "Hey, everybody, you don't forget this is the last day. You need to have it postmarked by such and such today. You know, write your story." So I said, "What the heck? Let me do it." So I wrote a little paragraph about why I feel I'm the happiest pass holder on Earth and all this stuff. And I remember going down the stairs and just about to go out the door. My son said, "What are you doing?" I said, I'm going to mail this to the Walt Disney Company, and if we win, you and I are going to Walt Disney World. You know, just a kid. Yeah. Right. Well, about 3 or 4 months later, there's this package that is waiting for me when I come home from work, and I opened it up, and it was a prism. It was, I'd say it was about 1.5 feet high. It was in three different pieces, and it was the castle, and they had one piece was from Cinderella Castle in Walt Disney World. Another one was from Sleeping Beauty in Anaheim, and the other one was from the castle in Japan. And there was a letter that said, "You won."
Wow!
And it's like, oh, whoa. Yeah. So I ended up going down there. I ended up seeing Lights Motor Action for the first time. I didn't like it. And then I saw Stitch for the first time.
The first time you didn't like it? I liked it the first time.
That was 2005, yeah. Oh, and so it was really... It really something. And from that, I mean, everything kind of took off because eventually I was and then, of course, the podcast came into play and talking with Len and we talked with Matt and Mike and we started that. And we had no idea what was going to happen, although back in April of that year, 2005, I had approached Mouse Planet and I said, "Why don't we do something called a podcast? I think it's something that we could really..." No, it's not going to take off. So they really didn't feel that it was the place. So I said, okay. And then I talked with Len, and next thing you know, we're doing WDW Today. Now, about a year or two later, a whole bunch of things happened. I was contacted again by Disney, and they picked me out of all the winners, and they flew me and my wife to New York, and we were there for the Year of a Million Dreams, announcement. One thing led to another, and it was just amazing. I got to talk with a lot of people. Got to meet Greg Erber, who was the author for the Mickey Monitor. I got to talk to them. They interviewed me about, you know, what pass holders want and everything. So it was really cool. And then eventually I ended up, I was friendly with Deb Wills. And, of course, we did Mouse Fest and we did Magic Meets. And I started writing for Deb and doing a letter every week, every month, and doing a blog. And it was just crazy after a while. And, I mean, all this time I'm running, of course. And then eventually my best friend, Michelle Scribner McLean, and I decided to put together a running podcast because of the interest in Run Disney. And sure enough, here we are today. So at one point I was doing 5 podcasts a week plus, and that was 3 weeks a month. And then on the fourth week, there was a live 2-hour podcast. So it really was very, very busy. And all along, I got to meet a lot of great people. I was very fortunate. I was able to interview some people who I thought I would never speak to, and made a lot of friends. A lot of them are Disney cast member friends. I found out a lot about the company that I admire. There's a lot of things about the company that I wish they would do differently. But all in all, they're always trying to develop a win-win situation for the guests and for themselves. And, for that, I'm very grateful. There's a lot of nice memories that have been created by that company. And also with the running, there have been a lot of just very moving stories of those who have changed their lives, who have become more fit. And, really, it's been really, really gratifying. And I'm very humbled by all the friends I have and all the very complimentary words I've been receiving over the last several weeks about the WW Today. And it's kind of mixed about stepping away from that podcast. But I really think that that there's a time for everything to shift. And I think it's going to be that time now, and Logan and his buddies will take it from here.
Yeah, I'm excited to see where that goes. And I was going to say that it's a bummer that podcasting thing didn't take off, or, you'd have been able to actually do something. that's so cool. I love hearing. I'm kind of a podcast junkie as well. I mean, I am very interested in the podcast movement, conferences and things like that. So I love talking to other podcasters, which is not what this show is about. But I do love, we've talked on this show before, the connections that you can make with a community through podcasting, through blogging, through Disney meetups. It's just such a cool opportunity, not just to talk in a microphone or to write for a big website, but as you said, to make friends and to hear about mm-hmm. people's lives that have changed. That's really, really cool.
You know, we talk about it. We talked about this before, that we enjoy all getting together and just kind of recording our thoughts and putting it out there for people to listen to. But to me, there's nothing better than that right there. It's just meeting with all these people and hanging out, and you just share that common interest, and it's so much fun, and it's what it's all about, in my opinion.
Yeah, we've Matt and Len and Mike and I we've been we haven't been to Disneyland together, but we've been to several places, Magic Meets, and which was in Pennsylvania, and we've also been in New York City together. They actually surprised me for my birthday 1 year.
That's
and, we've been in Walt Disney World together, I would say at least 10 or 11 times. And we've had special events there. We've done 4 parks in 1 day. We've mm-hmm. done Mouse Fest, of course, and Reunion, more recently Reunion. Mm-hmm. So, and we've had some good times. It's been a lot of work, though, because the events, even though it's so nice to see all our friends and everything, planning and the schedule and trying to do things so that everybody has a good time is very, very tiring. And usually at the end of a long Mouse Fest weekend or Reunion weekend, we're all pretty tired, happy and satisfied and thrilled that everybody had a good time. But boy, it's really a lot of work to make sure that everybody is happy. And it's But I think it's worth the effort. It really is.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
So now, though, as you know, Jimmy mentioned, you mentioned several times that you, if people listen to your other show and they kind of know you as the runner, you know, the guy who does Mickey Miles and talks about Run Disney. And so you said throughout a lot of your different experiences writing and podcasting that you had been running all along. How long have you been running at the Disney races?
Well, the first one I had signed up for a... the Walt Disney World Half Marathon in 2006. And so, I mean, I had been a runner since high school, running here and there, always trying to stay fit. I've been as best an athlete as I could be, you know, playing basketball and baseball and so, you know, you name it. And, you know, running has always been a way to, you know, keep in shape and everything. So I had been running for a while, and then I decided, you know, my longest run had been maybe 7 or 8 miles. And I said, gee, you know, I think I'll try to do a half marathon. And so I started training in 2005 for the 2006 Walt Disney World Half Marathon. And my first race was actually in October of 2005. I had gone down to sign up for something called Race for the Taste. And when I had gone over to the World of Sports at that time, it was not ESPN World of Sports, when I went to pick up my bib on a Friday, they had a Susan Komen race the next day, which would have been the day before my 10K, and it was $25. It was a 5K. I thought, why not? So I signed up for that one, and so I ran a 5K. And then the next day I ran the 10K, which was the Race for the Taste. And that was my first race, and that was sort of a warm-up for the Walt Disney World Half Marathon in 2006. And that was my first half marathon, and it was somewhere around five and a half miles that I broke my ankle.
Oh, my gosh.
And, what happened, Jen, was that it was kind of cold that morning, so everybody had, like, layers on. So I think I had a pair of shorts on. I don't think I had tights on. I don't remember. But I had a sweatshirt on that I had purchased from Walmart, maybe $5. And so I figured that at one point I was going to take it off. And sure enough, it was right around when you get past the Contemporary and just before you turn to the left to go past the guard shack near the Magic Kingdom that I started taking my sweatshirt off. I didn't want to stop because I was doing a really good pace. Mm-hmm. And as I lost sight, I stepped on some other t-shirts, sweatshirts that had been discarded, and there was a bottle underneath it. And I didn't go down, but I thought I had just sprained my ankle. And so I was kind of limping most of the way, and I kept on running. And I said, it's just a little sprained ankle. And then when I got to the 9 mile mark, I think it was, there was a volunteer, a paramedic with a big bottle of Biofreeze.
Yeah.
And I said to him, hey, load me up. He said, well, you have to take your shoe off first. And I thought, if it's sprained and I take my shoe off, I may not be able to get the shoe back on.
Right.
So I said, that's okay. And so I ran the rest of the way thinking it was a sprained ankle, but it turned out to be a broken ankle. When I got home, I had an x-ray, and the doctor said, you have a singular fracture of the left ankle. So
that's crazy.
That's crazy that you ran the rest of the race on it.
No, I just didn't know. And to this day, I say to myself, if I had known if it was broken, I don't know what I would have done. I think I would have stopped because I would have felt, I'm going to do more damage to the ankle. But I thought it was just sprained. So
I'm curious, depending on your, you know, how you're wired, like, if you would have stopped, because I was going to say that's my my husband will be happy to hear that I'm not alone, that I have not done anything quite like that. My goodness, no broken bones. But I definitely, my first and only ever, and I have no intention of having any other beyond a first full, was this past last year. And I was definitely hurt the whole way, and I just was too stubborn to stop. And so I wonder if, I don't know, if you found out at like 9 or 10 miles, if you wouldn't have just at least walked the rest of the way. But that is crazy.
Well, you know, Jennifer, I think the big deal there was that it was my first half marathon.
Yeah.
If it was my second, third, or fourth, I might have said, hey, you know, today's not my day. But it was my first. I had been looking forward to it. I was really psyched, and I just didn't want to stop, and so I kept going. So,
well, you certainly have won best marathon story.
That's right.
That I've heard. You ran it on a broken ankle.
That's
so
crazy. That you broke there. That's totally crazy.
So I don't know if it's because I've just been listening mainly to podcasts probably since about 2005. And it seems lately that the Run Disney events are like super, super popular. Is it because of the atmosphere? What do you attribute the popularity, the crazy popularity that these things just sell out in a matter of a day?
One of our co-hosts had a question that went along with that. Like, they're also ridiculously expensive compared to local races. And I have my opinion, but why do they still, I mean, why do you think they're still so incredibly popular and worth the money, in my opinion?
My first Walt Disney World half marathon was $78 registration, and I believe they're close to $200 now for a half.
But even $78 is relatively expensive for some.
It is, yeah. Usually around $50 or maybe it's somewhere between $50 and $70 maybe for a local half marathon, if that much. Why are they popular? I think that one of the things that everyone needs to keep in mind is that the field of runners for a Run Disney event is primarily made up of Disney fans. Mm-hmm. So if there are approximately between 23 and 25,000 people who will be running the half marathon with me on that Saturday, 24,000 of them, or 97% of them are, the base is that they're Disney fanatics. They're Disney fans. If they weren't Disney fans, think of it this way. If they weren't Disney fans, would they spend that money? Because as Disney fanatics, we turn our head when we purchase annual passes. We turn our head when we buy those Disney Vacation Club accounts. We turn our heads when we book our rooms, or we pay a lot of money for a meal. So I think in that regard, we have to look at it that way, that the base is that they're Disney fans first. Secondly, a Run Disney race is different from others in that it's not really competitive. There are a lot of interesting things that happen along the way, depending upon which race you run, which coast you run at. There are themed races, and there are things which really make it fun. There are runners who will spend hours upon hours making costumes so that they can look really special in Star Wars races, or in the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror 10 Mile, or the Princess Weekend. So there's a lot of fun that goes into it. There's not a lot of stress that goes into a Disney race as opposed to maybe a non-Disney race. You're there to have fun. And many times I've told everyone, don't try for a personal best in a Disney race, because everyone is there having fun. There are going to be photo opportunities with the characters. You're going to see interesting things that you would not see on any other race. And so I think that that's part of it. Number one, they're Disney fans. Number two, it's fun and it's not stressful. One more thing is that, and everybody it goes crazy over these things, and I know sometimes I kind of, it's the bling.
Yeah.
You know, it's the bling. And what has happened is that the Run Disney folks have realized too that after someone has done, and I've been doing the half marathon since 2006. After a while, it's going to hit the runners that, well, I've done this before, so maybe I don't want to do it. Hence, all of a sudden we see the dopey, with the goofy, the rebel challenge, the glass slipper challenge, where runners are offered the opportunity to do back-to-back races, and for that effort, they receive another special medal. Coast to coast, if you do a half marathon on each coast within a year, you get a special coast to coast medal with the Disney partners. So I think that the bling is there too. So Disney fanatic, the having fun, it's very much a social event now. It's a huge, huge social event. Mm-hmm. It's just amazing how many people know, how many people you get to know in the running community from this, and the bling. So I think all that, and I think people just turn their heads for the prices. Now, I will say, however, that over the last 3 years, I have seen a drop off. For the most part, people were doing maybe 3 Disney races a year, maybe 4. I think it's dropped down to an average of 2 now for most people, because you have to think of it in terms of not just the registration, but getting to that location, right, be it Anaheim or Orlando, booking that room, getting tickets, eating, all kinds of other costs are associated with a run Disney event. So for that matter, I think that has slowed down the registration. It had been really crazy within the last maybe 18 months. It was really crazy. The last 6 months, it slowed down with one exception, and that would be inaugural races. I'm sorry. Those races, which are brand new, tend to sell out real fast. The ones that had been around for a while, not so fast.
I was going to say, I have all the exact same. You actually absolutely hit the nail on the head. I had so many of the same things. It's unlike any other race. It's a huge spectacle, a whole big event, more than just the race, that the people there are generally, not always, but generally so positive, and you have such camaraderie with people you're riding the bus with and people you see in the parks afterwards, and that it's so beginner friendly. And I think, but I never quite thought of the angle, like you said, that we will. I've said on this podcast a lot of times, I'll pay quite a bit of money for the experiences that I think have value because they're unique, because they're at Disney World, because they're going to do a good job with it. And yeah, I never quite thought of that it's just another thing that fits that category very well. It's another thing that I'm very willing to pay for because it really, really is that valuable compared to the $30, $40, $50 I'll spend locally on a race that totally doesn't compare. So Jimmy knows this story that I absolutely am not a runner. They joke that I am because I've done several Run Disney races. So I sometimes I'm a runner, but the first half that I signed up for was in 2007. And it was because at the time we were going to Disney World every few years. We didn't have kids. And I used it as an excuse to, you know, I told my husband, who is a runner, I said, I'll do the half if we can do it in Disney World. So that was my very first race ever of any kind. And so it ruined every other race for me, to be perfectly honest, because they're not the same. They're not nearly so fun as Disney races. I'm always like, where is all the entertainment and the characters and the wonderful people working the, you know, the different health booths and things like that. So the other thing that you hit in the head is absolutely that metal envy. I ran the half, and then my husband wanted to run a full. I'm like, no, I'm just going to run the half again. And he said, well, I just kind of want a different medal. I'm like, ooh, I already have Donald and I don't have Mickey. And that was my first full. And then we saw the beautiful, shiny, sparkly glass slipper for the glass slipper challenge. I'm like, well, I have to run that. And every time the Avengers medals come out, I'm like, we've got to get out for an Avengers. So you are absolutely, you totally have the pulse on this community, I think.
So do you think there's a large percentage of people that do these races that are maybe Disney runners, and I don't want to discount of any means, but not necessarily runners, but just Disney runners. Like they look for these Disney events, yes, but they probably don't run their local races or anything else, just only run at Disney.
I totally
am. Yeah, Jimmy, I think that there's a percentage. Yeah, there's a percentage of people who are running just because they're Disney fans and they're not runners per se, and they just they focus on one particular race, yeah, maybe one a year, and they train for that race, and then once that race is over, they'll take time off from running, and then if they find another one, and once they know what it takes to train for a certain race, they have an idea regarding how far in advance they need to start their training. But I think you're right. I mean, I would be lying if I said I wasn't surprised as to how many of my Disney friends were Disney friends first, and then they became runners.
Yeah.
And when I think of them, I say, wow, I never would have thought that he or she would have been a runner, but they were Disney fans first, and then they're runners. And I think that it was very much a almost like an epidemic. It was very, it just catches on. It's like, wow, I'm not truly in this Disney community unless I'm a runner. So, but I think that's the case. But there are some that don't run outside of Disney. The only ones that do are the ones who want to try something before they actually get to that Disney race, because they need to prove to themselves that they can. I don't know if this happened to you, Jennifer, but I know a lot of people will email me and they'll say, Mike, I've been training for my very first half marathon, be it in January or Princess or whatever. And they're in their training and they say, do I need to run the 13.1 miles in a training run before the actual race in order to be ready? And I understand that for many people, it's a mental thing.
Yep.
But for the most part, if you're hitting between 9 and 10, you should be fine because there's a little thing called adrenaline.
Oh, yeah.
that will take you through the first 5K. So it's when you train for a half or a full, and you know this, Jennifer, that you're training for the last 5 to 10K of the race. You're not training for the first. You need to figure out mentally what's going to happen when you hit 18 miles for that marathon or when you hit 9 or 10 miles for the half. And I tell them, you know, don't overtrain. Just do your best. And if you're going for the half, do 9. If you're doing the full, then that's when it gets really hard to recommend because everybody's different. And some people can do 20 miles on a training run and they'll be ready. And others need to do 26. And if you're listening to Jeff Galloway, Jeff will tell you to do 27
right,
because he wants that mental comfort to settle in. So,
well, and I can absolutely, like, I can, in my head, I can believe, I mean, both from like a medical, psychological standpoint and having been at these races, I can totally believe that if you've run 10, like your training, a lot of training programs will stop at 10 for a half. If you've run that, you'll be fine for the last three. But I definitely, for my first, I absolutely made my husband run 13 with me because it was, you're exactly right, it was a mental thing. I needed to know that I could do it. And that was the only time I did that. Since then, I've never run the full distance for training. But that first time, I felt like I needed to.
Yeah, and now you know. Now right. You've got that experience. Right. So you know, one of the things I also wanted to mention about another reason for the success, I talked about the social aspect of Run Disney, and they actually hit the jackpot when they signed Jeff Galloway as the official training consultant for Run Disney, and they hit the jackpot when they signed Tara Guidis for their nutritionist. And of course, the race announcers, Carissa and Rudy and John. I mean, all these people have been on our podcast. And, you know, be it on the air or off the air, they're just a delight. And they have really connected with people. So when you go down there, they love doing Run Disney events because they see all their friends. And when you're in those corrals, and you know this, Jennifer, it's 5 o'clock in the morning and you're in the corrals, there's a million people, but you hear their voices and it's like, oh, there's my friend Rudy, there's my friend Carissa, there's my friend John, and they're keeping me entertained and I'm ready to go. And it was never more important than the recent wine and dine because of what happened down there. And they just kept us loose, and it was, you know, another piece of the pie that contributes to Run Disney's success.
Well, and to that point, I've only spoken with Jeff and with Tara at like the expo, but that in and of itself, the fact that I've spoken with them, they are so approachable, and they're so anyone who's listening that's not familiar, Jeff Galloway is he ran in the Olympics, yes, but he actually has this like run walk method and lots of science and research behind it, why it may be good for you. I know it's not for everybody, but it's the only race that I've been to that will have groups of people that are doing this run 2 minutes, walk one, run 5 minutes, walk 30 seconds, whatever your interval may be. It's not only, I mean, it's not just accepted, it's really, really common to see that. So between just their approachability and their kind of methodology, it just screams that everyone is welcome and that anyone can do it if you want to do it. So I think that's really cool.
Yeah, and I think that you see more Galloway type runners in a Run Disney race than you would in a non-Run Disney race.
Absolutely.
So yeah. So it's like you said, it's accepted. It's not frowned upon. Yeah, there are going to be people who say, well, you know, you need to run the whole thing.
Right.
And as someone who's run the whole thing and as someone who's done Galloway, I can tell you that doing the Galloway, you recover much faster. You feel more refreshed at the end of the race. And you can do, I mean, I remember I was always trying to, you know, always wanted to run the whole race. And then when they had the inaugural and probably the first and last time they had the Chippendale Relay, I think that was 2011, I think, where Saturday was the half, and then Sunday was a marathon relay where two people would run a half a marathon, and combined they would be a marathon. So you would run the first leg, cool. and then you'd hand off. Yeah. So and there was a Chippendale medal and everything. And I remember training for that, and that was the first time I had to run back to back half marathons. And I knew that the only way that I could do that and not kill myself was to do the Galloway method. And what was very interesting about that experience was that because I was very and it's very hard to discipline yourself to stick with the intervals, yeah. because I had done it a certain way, my Sunday race, which was, you know, the same distance as the Saturday race, I was like 10 minutes faster. So it was, and it was basically because I had the recovery benefit from that I had gotten from doing Jeff's method. So I was able to recover. My legs were fresher. And then on Sunday, it was halfway through, and I said, you know, I think I can go faster because I didn't kill myself right. yesterday. Yeah. I still ran the Galloway method on Sunday, but it just really worked. So. So there's nothing to be ashamed about when you do that. It's for a lot of people, that's how they get through these races. And, you know, it's not if you run the race, it's covering the distance. And we've said many times that, you know, you're a winner just getting to the start line.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of, I mean, just in case anyone's wondering, there are a lot of people who never intend to run one step. They walk the whole way. They train for that 16-minute pace, and people are equally as encouraging to those people in the back of the pack as they are to the person who crosses the finish line first. It's such an encouraging environment.
Yeah, it's really, I know that for the 5K, when all the fans are leaving and they know, we know that there's one runner left on the course, they make a big deal out of it. It doesn't matter if you're first or last. Cool. It's a success story both ways.
And Mike, I think I saw something pretty recently that you're going to be volunteering at the marathon weekend.
Yeah. So we are, Michelle and I are volunteering for the 5K. We have to report by 3 a.m.
Oh my gosh.
For the 5K. So we're doing that. Go ahead, Jimmy. What
would be like a volunteer duty? I mean, could it be just handing out waters? Is it, could it possibly entail?
For the 5K, it could be crowd control, although I think most of the crowd control stuff is done by the Run Disney payroll, the cast members. But I think cheering people, watching, doing a little bit of crowd control along the course. For the 5K in January, it's a long world showcase, so it's not that difficult. It could be handing out water at the end, handing out the cooling towels at the end, putting medals on people's head, handing out the little boxes of goodies, the water, the Powerade, the bananas. You could do that. I know that for the marathon, we are giving out the bonus medals. So I will have the luxury of being able to present people with the Dopey. The Goofy medal. Looking forward to that. So we're doing the five. We're volunteering for the 5K, running the 10K, running the half, and then we're doing the medals. And then we also for our podcast, we also have a we're doing a cruise with about 80 of our running friends, and we're sponsoring our Mickey Miles Dream Cruise 5K at Castaway Key. So we're also doing that after the marathon. We have a medal that was designed by Chris Haleopoulos, who does I Am the Albert Einstein books and all the other books that Brad Meltzer writes. So we're really excited about that. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting weekend. And there's something else that's going to happen, but I'm saving that announcement for January.
Ah, exciting.
Nice.
Little tease.
All right, I like it.
And that weekend, okay, so I know, I realize, and we'll talk a couple more minutes about your show before we go, but so really, I realize you have an entire podcast devoted to this, and we're, you know, having one evening together talking. But if there is, like I mentioned, I have a couple of friends who are going down marathon weekend for their very first half marathon, their first Disney race. Do you have any, like, must-hear, the top, you know, tip or two, must-hear things for people going down for, like, marathon weekend or princess weekend the next month?
You mean Jen, their first time?
Yeah, somebody who doesn't know what to expect at all. Like, just, coming into it blind.
I think that one of the things that I would caution them is to understand that it's a very big event and that when they walk to the corrals, they're going to be they will be just floored by the number of people they see. I think that what I would recommend is that, number one, if they're running in a big race, to stay off their feet as early as possible the day before. Try to get into an early day mode a couple days beforehand, because you have to get up early. You have to be in your corrals at a certain point. I think that they need to focus on finishing and not finishing as fast as they can. I think that a lot of people make the mistake of trying to run it real fast. And I have seen 50 yards from the start, people running on the grass and twisting their ankle, and they're done. The grass at the start, especially on the right side, is uneven and it can be slippery. So, and I know people are just trying to get off like as fast as they can, but they need to be patient. I think patience is very important to have in a Disney race or your very first time, understanding that it's going to be very, very crowded. If you're worried about time, then, and if you're worried about the balloon ladies and you're worried that you're not going to be able to do that 16 minute per mile pace, then I would say get to the front of your corral and so that you have a little bit of a cushion, because that clock does not start until the last person in the last corral crosses the start. So you need to be patient. There's going to be so many people that you have to fight the temptation to zigzag, because if you zigzag around people, you're adding distance to your race, and you're adding, you're also expending energy. So just be patient, and when you get a chance, you'll be able to go as fast as you want. Again, the golden rule, the number one objective is to finish. Once you finish and get that medal, you now have the experience of that Run Disney race. And then you can say, I want to do this again. And next time I'm going to go a little bit faster, but I know where I can go fast and I know where I have to be very patient. So
I think
it's a very, very much a learning experience.
I think that's great advice too. As you were talking, I was thinking about kind of the parallels to seeing the parks. I think anyone who is kind of in the same sort of circles that we're in, that really loves going to Disney World, that's gone multiple times, knows that the best way to experience it is not running through the park like crazy, but it's slowing down and enjoying it. And I think, kind of as you alluded to a little bit, if you are comfortable with that 16-minute pace, then just finish. Like you said, take some time to stop and take some pictures. You're going to see some very unique characters in photo ops. And I understand what you're saying too, as far as subsequent races, I've maybe stopped less or not waited in line for characters. But that first time, I just think that if you're not too concerned about the time, and like you said, there's a little bit of a grace period there. If you know your pace, take some time to have the full experience. I think that's really something that just makes it really special.
And one more tip. If you want Rudy or Carissa to yell out your name at the finish, what you need to do is you need to make sure you're away from a lot of other runners about 50 yards from the finish line. There's a metal announcer's mat that's on the ground. And as you cross that, your chip is red. If you cross that with a number of people, then there will be a ton of names that show up on their screen, and they may not pick out your name. But if you're the only one or one of two or three that cross that mat, then your name will be shown up on their screen with a lot of blank space, and they'll be able to pick your name out. So there's a little.
A great tip. I did not know that. I just thought they sort of looked at the bibs and tried to read really fast.
No, they have a fantastic little. I mean, if they know you and again, they've gotten to know so many people.
Sure.
They don't need to, but that's a little.
That's a good tip.
That's a little announcement. Yeah, yeah. So, it's quite an experience for those who've never done it before.
So for somebody like myself, Mike, who's never really run before, where do I start?
Well, Jimmy, the first thing you need to do is walk. You need to find a very good pair of shoes that are comfortable. Go to a running store, have them see you run, have them see you walk, and they'll be able to, a good running store will be able to figure out what is the best shoe for you. And then you then have to show patience, like I said before, and gradually build up your stamina. There are many books out there. There are Couch to 5K books One of the things that I always caution people is not to bite off more than you can chew. You can overtrain early as well as overtrain late. And just be patient. Give it time. Understand that when you train to be a runner, it's just like running a marathon. It's a long process because you cannot just flip a switch and go out and run 5, 6, 7 miles. There are people out there. I have one friend. You may have heard him on the show. His name is Bernie Edwards. He the first time he tried to, I think he ran maybe 20 feet. And he had to stop. But the benefits are just amazing. I get emotional sometimes when I talk about some of my friends who have thrown away all their prescription medications. Their blood pressure has gone down. They no longer have diabetes. Their weight's gone down. It's just amazing. And they say, "Oh, Mike, it's because of you." And it's like, you know, let's stop right there. Maybe I kind of said, you know, you can do it, but I'm not the guy out there. I'm not the person out there putting on the shoes and sweating and running and doing all that. You need to thank yourself. So there's a lot of benefits from this, Jimmy, but it's something that doesn't happen overnight, and you need to get the good shoes, and you need to put together a realistic plan. There are plenty of books out there. My suggestion would be to maybe go online and take a look at what book kind of speaks to your heart and kind of gives you an idea of what you can do. And I think the other thing is to set a realistic goal. So maybe there's a 5K somewhere nearby that you would like to do. Maybe it's in March, maybe it's in April, and you've got all this time to get there. I think having realistic goals is just like anything else in life. It's the first step towards who knows what.
I love that.
Fantastic. Yep.
It's very definitely. Cool. So we've mentioned Mickey Miles a lot. And at the site, at MickeyMiles.com, as well as the podcast, you have not just, you know, encouragement and general information, but you have specific information about upcoming races and race courses. And can you let people know a little bit else about what they'll find there and where else to find you online?
Well, again, it's myself and Michelle Scribner-McLean, who Michelle started running in 2009, and she has more medals than me since then. Mm-hmm. She's been doing all, she's just done Dopey, she's done Goofy, she's done Reach the Beach. She's done all the races too. What we try to do is we try to provide information for those who are thinking about running a Disney race. We want them to be informed. We try to preview every race, give everyone an idea of what the course is like, what kind of challenges are there, what they can expect when they go to Disneyland or Disney World. We try to talk about nutrition. We have Jeff on, who talks about run, walk, run. We have questions that are sent in by our listeners, and Jeff will answer them. We recently did 4 shows. We talked with Jeff for 90 minutes,
oh my goodness,
and it ended up being 4 shows because he just is so generous with his time. The other night I talked with Rudy Novotny, who is the man that everybody hears. He announces the races. We talked with Carissa. We've talked with John Pelkey to learn, you know, people get to know them and they want to know, well, what does it mean to be a Run Disney announcer? We talk with Tara Guidas, who is who's the nutritionist, and telling everybody how you train, how you eat, what you should eat the night before, what you should eat, you know, during the race, things like that. We're trying to do whatever we can to prepare people to take the angst out of it, to make sure that they understand what's in store for them. One of the things that kind of got me started with this, and I started doing a Run Disney blog, I think it was 2007, is that you don't need to be a stick, a really skinny person to run. You can run no matter what shape you're in. You may need to adjust certain things along the way, but if you really put your heart into it, you know, running can really make a difference in your life. So we're trying to help people. At the same time, we have also brought on 6 people with success stories because we found that if you can hear someone talk about where they've come from and where they are, it's very much a motivating factor. And it's been very, very gratifying to have people like that on. We also do reviews of races. Talk about what happened at this race, what we would like to see. We, time to time, we've had the race director John Hughes and Betsy Hughes on to talk about races. We're there to try to help people, and that's the main goal. At the same time, we also have a running team. We have over 400 people worldwide who are on our Mickey Milers, and when we get together, it's like a family. And we have dessert parties. We watch illuminations from special vantage points around World Showcase Lagoon. We have special events. Our adopted charity is Give Kids the World, which is a very special village in Orlando that I encourage everybody to go visit. It's just amazing what they do for terminally ill children down there. And we have had the last 2 years, we've had special events, which we've devoted to raising money. We recently had an event in August where we rode Small World from beginning to end, from rope drop to closure. And I didn't, but most, I think there were two people who did it. A lot of us did it to raise money. And next year we're doing something that I'm sure the cast members are going to have fun with. As we're planning to ride all day the Jungle Cruise. So
oh gosh, that's going to be
that sounds much better. It's a small world.
And we're going to have we're probably going to have between 50 and 100 people doing that. So that's just going to be really, really funny. So it's very much a community. It's very much a social event. It's nice to see people out there getting fit and trying to take their Disney fix one more level. And it's been fun. And if it wasn't fun, I wouldn't be doing it. It's a lot of work at times trying to come up with an appropriate topic. But it's very cyclical. You have all these races all year round. Yeah. And Disney originally was doing this to put heads in the beds, as we say. And it's become a big part of their bottom line now. Run Disney has become quite a brand, and it's made for very consistent attendance throughout the months in both Disneyland and Disney World.
Yeah. And so, actually, misspoke, MickeyMilesPodcast.com. Or search for Mickey Miles in iTunes, Stitcher, wherever else you listen to this show. I actually learned a ton, and like I mentioned, I will probably get off and start Googling what my next race will be, because that's what happens when we start talking Run Disney. So, Jimmy, when are you running?
I'm probably going to run to the refrigerator.
Mike will keep working on it.
You know what, though? You know, you expanded my mind. I did have to think a little bit. You know what? Maybe it's time. I definitely need to do something to get in better shape. Next month will be my 41st birthday. So I probably need to do something. So
I have a friend who decided to run her first full before she was 50. You have so much time. You should start running half sooner than that.
Definitely do that.
Start with a 5K next year.
My first half, I was almost 56.
That's nice. Amazing. So, that's awesome. Yeah. So cool.
Mike, you've been more than generous with your time, and we really appreciate you. One question I always like to ask guests when they come on the show is, what makes you or what made you a Disney nerd?
Oh, wow. So
before the trip reports, because that definitely
grew up. Yeah. Well, I grew up in the 50s, and I watched Walt Disney. I mean, I was around when Walt Disney was around, and I watched him, and I watched The Wonderful World of Color and The Wonderful World of Disney on television. I was a big Davy Crockett fan. I was a Mickey Mouse fan. I was a Mickey Mouse Club fan. Television in the 50s was really big with Disney. Like I said, Davy Crockett, Zorro. You may have heard Zorro. And then when I finally got to take, I think I went to Disney World in the 70s, 76, I believe, 75 or 76. I think it's 75. And I was really amazed by everything down there and how I kind of, in writing, we talk about willful suspension of disbelief. And it's the ability for a writer to take their audience and just surround them with what's on the confines of the page so that they forget what's going on. And then in 1990, I went down and I forgot what day of the week it was and I didn't care.
That's awesome.
And I thought, if this place can do that, then there's going to be something special going on here. That plus how I see children react to certain things down there and people react. It's just a way for all of us to just flush our cares down the drain and for even for a tiny moment, just be a child again and be pampered. I think everyone complains, and I know I've complained, about the cost of a Disney vacation, but we still go down. And so I think that the reason why we still go down is because
We have a willful suspension of disbelief about the prices.
Well, yeah, I think right. And it's like, I think we want that. We want to forget our troubles. We
Absolutely.
Want to get down
I agree.
And do that. And, you know, when you're watching Illuminations, when you're doing anything, it's okay. I'm not at my job. I don't have to worry about bills. I don't have to worry about anything else. So I think that's part of it. I think, the other thing is that I've had a lot of hobbies in my life. I've done sports. I've been commissioner of softball leagues. I've done this. But since doing the Disney stuff, I've made more friends in the past 15, 20 years doing this than I had my whole lifetime up till then. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I think that there's a value system that comes with being a Disney nerd. And I think that most of my friends have that value system, and I highly appreciate that. And I think it's all based upon what Walt Disney started. I think that one of the things that I do regret is that as the years go on, there are going to be generations who don't really know anything about him. Okay. And they don't realize that what we have seen and what has happened, it all came from him. And it's just amazing how his legacy is carried on. Even in Run Disney, the quality of the Run Disney races. So I think that's what did it. I think you become a Disney nerd because if something makes you happy. I mean, we're Christmas nerds because we like Christmas. Mm-hmm. When you're in Walt Disney World, there's magic all around. And it doesn't matter if you're 7 or if you're 97. It's there. And I think it's that willful suspension of disbelief. It's very hard to do that these days with all that's going on in the world. And when we get a chance, we grab for it and we hold on to it as hard as we can. And I think that's why we go to Disney World as much as we do. I think I've been there about 125, 150 mm-hmm. times. And each time I go down there, it's like the very first time again, because I know what I'm in store for.
That's so good. I don't even know. There's nothing else to say.
I was about to say, I completely agree. And that's definitely one of the best answers.
It's like a mic drop and we're done.
Since I've been asking that question, that's probably one of the best answers we've gotten so far. So,
very good.
We really appreciate your time. It's been fantastic. I've definitely learned a lot. And I know Jennifer, well, we were both very excited to have you on. So we really, really appreciate your time. And, you know, if there's anything we can ever do for you, hopefully maybe one day we can meet up in the parks and, you know,
race,
hang out and go ride It's a Small World together.
Yay.
Or something.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Well, Jennifer and Jimmy, thank you for having me on. And I hope that Jimmy, you know, you never know. And Jennifer, maybe we'll see you at a race sometime. I'm probably going to be at pretty much all the races next year. Maybe all but two. If you're down there, just give me a buzz and we'll meet up. And
I definitely would
just
love
for
to
all the yellow and just look for all the yellow and purple shirts. And that's the Mickey Milers.
Perfect. I will definitely find you.
I like yellow and purple. Go LSU Tigers.
I knew you'd like that.
All right. Thank you so much, Mike. It was great talking to you.
Nice talk with you guys.
If you would like to join our jamboree, there's a simple rule that's compulsory. Mortals pay a token fee. Rest in peace. The haunting's free. So hurry back. We would like it.